This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Welcome back, folks, here to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and joining us, the full MGO Blog Roundtable crew. I don't know that we've ever had four panel members on the StreamYard at the same
time. I don't think we've ever used a six-person screen before.
Yeah, this is a first.
Do we have a word count?
We're going to bring that in today with the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, starting off with Brian Cook, who is back with us. BC, good morning.
Good morning.
And then going down right below you, I feel like we should be introing it like the Brady Bunch. I don't know if Dave, do you even know what the Brady Bunch is? Did you ever see?
Of course.
Oh, you did? Okay. I'm older than
all you guys. I've watched all those shows.
All right. Seth Fisher, right behind Brian. Oh, right beneath Brian. Seth, how are you?
I'm fine. I've actually never watched a Brady Bunch episode. I know of the show, but I've never actually
ever?
Watched an episode of it. Never once.
Ever? Okay, so I don't feel so bad then, because, you know, I've never seen a Seinfeld episode from beginning to end.
Oh.
What? Ever.
No. Brady Bunch is before our time. Seinfeld was on when you were, like, TV watching age.
I've seen one from beginning to end. I've seen some Seinfeld, but never a full episode, ever. So... the only guy who I can say probably saw both series live is right next to you on the screen, our good friend Craig Ross. Craig, is that true? You saw
episodes? No. You know, I've never seen a single episode of the Brady Bunch. And I never saw a single episode of Seinfeld until David made me watch one. And it was very funny. It was about the marine biologist, or so. It was pretty damn funny. But I have this problem with canned laughter. I don't like people telling me that I'm too stupid, so they need to can the laughter so I know when things are funny. And so I can't watch Seinfeld because of the canned laughter. But I did watch one show, and I admit it was funny.
All right. And then Dave Nasternak, who is back with us. Dave, good morning. How are you? Dave, we lost your audio. We'll get it back.
These people are admitting they've never seen Seinfeld. He's like, that's it. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to any of you people anymore. Yeah, Go watch some Seinfeld, and we'll have some conversation about something.
Yeah, so offended that we have not seen a full Seinfeld episode. At least I haven't. But guys, it's amazing to say another week has come. And there's more NIL storyline. You keep thinking that, all right, nothing's going to happen with NIL this week. And, of course, then it does. This week it was the NCAA announcing that, hey, we're going to crack down on this. We're gonna go after these collectives that are putting out clear pay-for-play schemes. I wonder, does that amount to anything in your estimation, starting with you, Brian Cook?
Well, I mean... there was an FBI investigation that caught several programs red-handed 75 years ago. And as of yet, nobody has been punished except, like, Oklahoma State for some reason. So, it's impossible to take any claims of the NCAA saying, oh, we're going to step in and do something with any credibility at this point. Because they got something handed to them on a silver platter, and they still haven't been able to do anything with it. So are they going to be able to step in and say, well, you guys are not actually getting enough money for the things that you're getting from these kids if there's not enough quid pro quo. Like, that's a tricky legal argument. Doesn't seem like it's one that's going to stand up and invites a lot of antitrust stuff. I just think it's posturing, and that teams that programs that are smart are just going to ignore it entirely.
Seth?
It actually wasn't 75 years ago. It was 90 years ago that they got a report where somebody went around and actually spoke to every single program. This is the 1930s. And got everyone on record and got like coaches to say, oh, yeah, yeah, we've been paying players for ages. That's how you do things in college football. And nothing happened to them either. So there's a long, long history. But I'm sure that like right now, they're watching the news. They see these things happening just so in their face. That a lot of people are sitting around going, hey, someone's got to do something. And so finally the guys in the room are like, hey, guys, we got to do something. So now they're trying to, like, figure out what they can do, but they really can't do anything. Like, as soon as they do, there's no enforcement because the enforcement mechanism is the schools doing it themselves. So it's like you can put this in place, and then you have to say, okay, Miami, go investigate and see whether this is real. And Miami's just going to come back and be like, yeah, it was totally real.
All right, hold up, Craig. Dave, is your microphone back?
Is it? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear Dave. So what do you think of the NCAA saying they're going to crack down?
I mean, if they think that they can get money out of something, then I think that it's something to at least pay attention to, because that's generally what the NCAA has been about in a lot of ways. So will something come of it? I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But I have a feeling that like we talked about the last 2 weeks, they don't seem to have the power that they used to or something. And so it seems like a play in a way that they think they can get their hands on some of the money that is definitely being thrown around. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. Does it have teeth? I don't know.
And so, Craig, a legal piece, a legal question for you, because, I thought Dan Murphy wrote a great piece on this for ESPN. And he talked to a Tulane law professor who basically laid out, while this is seemingly an exercise in futility for the NCAA and allowing just a mechanism for some ADs and coaches to complain, said really the functional piece of this for the NCAA is to sort of prop up their argument that they've been making for eons to maintain their antitrust status. That is, hey, you've been saying that athletes can't be paid. They can't be employees. If they do, then we're going to lose fans because the fans will be so turned off. It'll kill our business model. If you don't interject now with some sort of action that sort of backs up that point, like you don't want to allow all this money to be flowing unencumbered, then that argument that you've been making forever that you need to make sure athletes aren't compensated in a greater fashion than they are now, well, you just nullified that entire argument. You had better at least fight this for the purposes of maintaining your antitrust status. What do you make of that point?
Boy, what is their antitrust status getting them right now?
I hear you.
That's the right question. I mean, I don't see that as salient. But I don't see the NCAA doing anything. Unless it's a circumstance. Heck, they're not doing anything with the guy who's going to Miami, are they? Didn't Miami announce he's getting $400,000 a year plus a car?
Well, Miami, there's like a booster who's got some sort of company that announced that he was sponsoring it.
Right. So, I mean, as I get it, the rule says, hey, if a kid comes to Michigan, he can pursue NIL opportunities. And that's what Michigan is telling people. You come here, you can pursue NIL opportunities. And we are theoretically facilitating some of that, one way or the other. And I think the NCAA is going to, that's what they anticipate as being within their rules. What they say is outside of their rules is handing someone a package. It says, hey, if you come here, we have this package in place. In other words, you can't induce a player to come to a school based on some NIL package that the school has put together, either through the front door or the back door. Now, is that something that's ever going to be enforced? No. Is it possible to enforce? Probably not. And so I just... Michigan seemingly And Hunter Dickinson has complained about this, seemingly is trying to follow what the NCAA anticipates on NIL. But, you know, how this hurts them in the end in recruiting, whether what other schools do. You know, some schools will do the same thing. And some schools will say, we're never going to get hurt with this. We're never going to get caught with anything. And we're just, it's the Wild West, as people have said. And that,
make,
you know, that's where
we're
at. Can
I make a quick point here?
Sure,
the,
of course.
There's no way for the NCAA to really do it. There's no way to define it so that you can actually, you know, without actually getting in the way of honest. Like, so, I'm going to give you an example. Let's say Michigan says, look, we are the school near Detroit. We're the school with the big engineering school, right? Anyone who comes here gets a muscle car. You want to come, you come play for Michigan, you get to drive a Corvette, right? Or a T-Bird or something, right? Like, that's something that would be smart for Detroit. That is something that would be smart for the school. It's something that would be working for the players, but it's still a quid pro quo. But it makes sense from a marketing perspective, the same reason that, like, the Big Three advertise with the Tigers all the time. It's a regional thing that people would associate with Michigan if we did that, and we should do that. It's a good idea. But, like, where do you draw the line? How do you know what's an incentive package versus what is, you know, a really good marketing opportunity that makes sense?
It seems to me that the way they make a distinction, at least in the state of Michigan law, between prospective student athlete and current student athlete. So technically, what you just laid out, Michigan could actually do that with Hunter. Like, the law doesn't forbid them from facilitating deals, from being a part of deals. It just gives them the option. It says they aren't required to. It does, however, make a very, very clear distinction when it comes to prospective student athletes, saying
right.
You can't be a part of compensation, facilitating deals in any way, shape, or form with prospective student athletes. So trying to weed out that inducement to get players to come. But once they're there, once they're Hunter Dickinson, legally anyway, you can get them deals. Now, practically, I don't know how realistic that is.
That's crazy, right?
But that's what the NCAA is saying, Brian.
So I know the NCAA is going to be like, so this guy's, you're recruiting this guy, and mm-hmm. he asks you what your NIL package is like, and you're like, oh, can't tell you about that. That's an inducement.
No, well, what Michigan is saying, at least, is that, as I gather, is if you come here, there will be NIL opportunities for you. Mm-hmm. That's what they're saying. They're, you know, as opposed to, if you come here, we already have a package in place for you. We've already negotiated and organized it, and that's an inducement. And that, now, is that a difference with any meaning? Well, probably not a whole lot, but and because of that, nothing will happen vis-a-vis enforcement.
So, I mean, what we're talking about here is communicating the same information but using evasive language to do
it. Yes.
That's what the NCAA's current law they're trying to enforce is.
What's
the point?
Here's the analogy. Back in the day, it was not legal to bring beer into Michigan Stadium, but everybody did it. I mean, and everyone sort of looked the other way. In fact, one day, my brother John and I were going, a nice hot day early in the season, my brother John and I were going into Michigan Stadium, and we had open cans of beer as we were walking in the stadium. And the ticket guy, the guy at the gate, said, hey, you guys, put that beer under your coats. I was like, oh, okay. Right.
This is the oldest you've ever seen.
My question is, why did you have a coat on a hot day?
Well, I don't know what we had on. Maybe we had shirts or t-shirts or something.
I'm surprised you didn't say, hey, use guys.
You know, it wasn't use guys. It was you guys.
I think
you
spoke in Latin probably at this point.
Yeah. So, in any event, and that's what the NCAA is saying. Put that beer under your coats so that we don't have to see it.
Yeah, I want to read this passage to you, because I just to make clear exactly what this law professor is saying, I'll just read this mm-hmm. this last paragraph. He said, the current marketplace for athletes may make it harder for the NCAA to fend off a pair of complaints under review by the National Labor Relations Board that say college football and basketball players should be considered employees. Also, the NCAA has argued against antitrust complaints in the past By claiming that without amateurism, fans would lose interest in college sports and their business would suffer. Feldman, who is this law professor, said that if the NCAA fails to police the way its athletes make money, it will have a hard time making those claims in the future. Quote, by avoiding any current legal risk and allowing these payments to continue, I think they are really setting themselves up to lose the very thing they fought for. If they don't fight right now, I'm not sure there's going to be anything left to fight for. Unquote.
Well, that sounds great to me. I don't have a problem with them losing that stuff and having to treat their employees as employees. Like,
I mean, it doesn't this imply that players are going to unionize?
Well, I mean, maybe should
be allowed to unionize. I mean, it feels like that's where we're going.
I guess at some level, a lot of these student athletes probably shouldn't be considered employees. Like, if you go to Bowling Green, mm-hmm. are you an employee? I don't think you are, because that program loses money, right? So in some ways, you're a recipient of charity from the school who wants marketing in exchange for your free tuition. So, you know, I think like at the D3 level, they're not employees, right? There's no possible way that you could construe a D3 athlete as an employee.
Well, wait a minute. You can still be an employee on a nonprofit.
Yeah, but this isn't we're not talking about nonprofits. We're talking about organizations that are essentially designed to lose money.
Well, I mean, but there's plenty of those.
They're getting something in kind. If you're still getting an education, yeah. D3 schools still have football programs for the same reason that D1 schools do. It's just not on the same degree. It's just, you know, but you're still giving them something of value, a degree and room and board for as long as you have a scholarship situation, there is some sort of form of payment for your services. And what the colleges need right now is some sort of guarantee that they're going to perform those services if they get the payment. And that's their problem right now, right?
Well, I mean, I guess, I don't know. Like, we talk about the unfairness of major college athletics a lot. And then the NCAA does have a point that once you get down to sort of the lower levels of D1 and everything below that, their original purpose is more or less intact, where these athletic programs are not making money hand over fist. They can't reasonably be said to be exploiting anyone, I don't think. So where do you draw that line? And I think the correct answer is just to stop drawing lines. And if Mount Union wants to say, okay, we're D3, but we're going to pay these guys whatever amount of money, okay. Or maybe D3 is some place where you can reasonably state that we're not going to do that at this level. And if you don't like that, there are other levels for you to participate at. But that's not really something that people focus on. They always focus on, like, okay, what's Alabama doing? What's Michigan doing? What's Ohio State doing?
And that's very fair. I mean, you're just talking about creating a salary cap and creating different levels of leagues where, look, it's just a competitive balance thing. And at that point, I think that makes total sense. That, look, we're going to have a league where Michigan and Alabama and Ohio State compete, where players can get paid so much in certain ways. Everyone gets a scholarship. But, like, we're going to have certain limitations on what you can and can't do only because it's going to be a competitive problem otherwise. And I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, I you know, the question of employee or exploitation, these are esoteric as applied. Let's put it that way. And I'm not sure it's particularly meaningful unless you've got a bargaining agent that can bargain for players, and the bargaining agent then, and the NCAA or the institution then sets the rules, and these rules essentially become contractual, as opposed to these sort of vaguer notions of, you know, is the place making money? Are they not? What are the interests? What, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I
think it's inevitable that you're going to, in the end, you're going to have unionization and contracts between either the bargaining units or the individuals. So
I think it's inevitable. It's a parallel discussion right now. Mm-hmm. One that when we were talking last week about Kliavkov and Sankey going to the Senate to talk about NIL and bringing some order to the chaos, they also were apparently going to be making mention of amateurism and making sure that we don't make athletes employees. They're going to be talking about that too. But the here and now of NIL and the portal, I want to focus on that for a bit more, because last week the discussion with Phil Martelli and Saadi Washington, I don't know how much of it you guys listened to, but there was a piece of it that really stuck out to me as one of the things that I really like as far as the chaos that has ensued, relatively speaking. He talked about how the brotherhood among coaches is eroding. I know you listened to it, Seth. You remember that part where he was talking about?
Yeah. And he started talking about like one instance where like something actually happened. He was just like, yeah, you know, and then someone went in the back room. We were like, how do you get this guy in the back door? And like they by the way, Sam, that was an absolute amazing show. People, I'm going to link it in the description for this one. So people should listen to that show because it was one of the best you've ever done. But I understand that, but like the coaching profession's been like that for ages. I'm surprised that like, except for maybe like a few schools, that there even would be that kind of camaraderie.
See, but here's the thing, and this is why I have some hope. He said, understand that the camaraderie and the collegiality of coaching is gone. Everybody is out here thinking, what are they up to? And no disrespect, but there are young guys in the business now who think I can make my mark by doing something that may not be illegal, because in today's world, who knows what's legal and illegal, but it's immoral and it's against the profession. So the portal, the NIL, it's hurt the profession, and it's hurt, like what you said, Sam, the brotherhood. We're all in this to make it a great game and a great experience for these young guys. That's not the way it is today. So why is that a good thing that he's feeling like that and coaches are feeling like that? Because Dave Nasternak, Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, Craig Ross, maybe we finally start to see coaches calling each other out publicly. You know, Will Wade is violating the rules. Maybe you're willing to call him out and hold him accountable now. You know, Sean Miller is getting DeAndre Ayton paid. Maybe you're willing to call him out now, right? You know, Nick Saban is poaching your player, Scott Satterfield. You mean you need to come with some proof if you're going to say it. He didn't have any proof when he called Nick Saban out, but he at least called him out publicly and said, man, that guy is poaching my player. Isn't that a good byproduct of all this?
I mean, we've been saying that for years, right? Well, it's like if you know, or you have examples of, oh, this coach knows, but he's not saying anything, or X, Y, or Z. So I guess there are just unwritten rules in coaching, right?
Well, there's even, David, you know, there's even unwritten rules in the media. Because a couple of years ago, I kept hearing this story about a player in the Big Ten who was being paid by an NBA player. And a well-known NBA player, well-known player in the Big Ten. And so I went to Sam, and Sam laughed in my face. He said, everybody in the media knows that's true. So I went over to Sam's rivals over at another site, and I asked their main guy, and he laughed in my face. He goes, everybody in the media knows that's true, but nobody in the media was willing to say it.
Because well, you got to be knowing it's true, and you got to be able to prove it. Right?
Well, right, but you know, that's right. But no one was even willing to whisper it, even in as a rumor in public, even though everyone covering the Big Ten seemed to know it.
There's an unstated thing, because I've spoken to a lot of athletes and former athletes, and I, you know, I like to ask them a question about like what did you know about, right? I'm not going to share it with anybody, but what did you know? And I asked one guy once, like, how come no one's ever stepped forward? How come like the players of all these thousands and thousands of players who play, how come people don't step forward? And, like, there's just an understanding, even if like one guy's getting a lot more than you or whatever, or some guy like you didn't like what happened. There's an understanding among players you don't want to mess with somebody else's money. That, like, in the end, what you're going to end up doing is messing around. You're going to end up screwing over someone that you like, too, if you are part of the exposure of the system. So, God, I mean, you don't rat on each other. That's just it inside the whole game. Everyone understands that.
You know, I think it's more selfish than that for a lot of coaches. I think they don't want to. It's a very small fraternity, right? You don't know who you're going to need a job from, who you're going to need a recommendation from, and you're telling this guy, that guy might be a guy who's in position to give you a job or help you get a job down the line, and you don't want to mess that up. But if you're feeling like it's every man for himself, if more coaches are feeling like that now, they might be more prone to calling that other guy out. And then and another important aspect.
I mean, call him out for what though? Like,
yeah, that's
Sean Miller's question. Getting DeAndre Ayton paid. Okay, that's not a problem.
So I'm not talking about that in this instance. I'm not talking about, you know, paying a recruit. I am talking about poaching my player.
Yeah, okay.
That's what seems to be getting the ire of coaches all over the places. Hey, my roster is being poached. I got guys coming saying, get in the portal and you can come get this from my program. And so to me, I'll give you an example without this is another instance, Craig, where I know something happened. I can't say exactly who because I haven't gotten permission. It's not my story to tell in that regard because I don't have the proof. But player is on a team's he's a commitment to a team. He suddenly wants to go somewhere else. The team that he is committed to knows they've been tampered with. They ponder reporting the tampering. They know, though, that the fallout from this will be, hey, you prevented this player from being able to move where he wanted to move. And so they make the decision eventually to not report the tampering because of the perception that they will be blocking the player as opposed to punishing that team, which is why I think you need to have more coaches willing to speak out. So the scope is narrowed. It's not about limiting that player from moving. If that player wants to leave, he should leave and go someplace else where he can be happy, but not to the team that came and encouraged him to leave my roster. That team should not be able to get that player. And the more that you can have coaches out speaking in unison to that end, I think the better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the portal is not great for sports. Like the antitrust argument that the NCAA makes about money is obvious garbage, but I think they could probably make a pretty decent one about the portal because I don't think it's good for college basketball or college football. Like I don't like everybody in the sport having to be Kentucky every year where your roster is entirely different. And part of the joy of college sports is watching Xavier Simpson come in. And then everybody wants to throw Xavier Simpson overboard, including myself. I'm not exempting myself from this and watching him turn into one of the greatest players in program history. Now, I wanted Frankie to do that. But when Xavier Simpson was in year one and year two, if he transferred, he was going to have to sit out a year. And that was part of the reason that he stayed, I bet. And Frankie can just go to Arizona State and win 5 games in a season. He wants to do that. So good luck with Bobby Hurley. That's definitely a coaching choice that you could opt into. But I think if you're a fan of college sports, you want major college athletes to be considered employees. Because what can you sign an employee to, Craig?
Well, you can assign an employee to a contract that
there you go. At that point, when they're getting money in exchange for services, you can legitimately say, well, we sign you to a 3-year deal, and you have an NBA out, but you don't have a Bobby Hurley out.
Right.
So
exactly so. And I think that, unionization or the process of signing contracts is a win-win. And the fact, I've never quite understood why the NCAA was fighting that. It seemed to me like a win for everyone, a win for the sport.
Well, I mean, they're mostly concerned about money, right? So the reason that they let free transfers happen is that was something that the muckety mucks didn't experience a cost about, right? NIL was tougher because the money that's going to kids in NIL is some of it is definitely being diverted from donations to the athletic department itself. So that's why you got the free transfers first, because that was free. That's why you got the NIL second, because that's not a direct cost. And that's why being an employee is still not on the table, because that is a direct cost to athletic departments that do not care about anything except the bottom line.
Well, I tend to agree with that. And I think the transfer portal is much more likely to have a deleterious effect on college sports than NIL or paying players. In the end, I don't think fans give a rat's ass whether players are truly paid or not. But I do think they get frustrated when they've got a kid for a year, and the next thing you know, he's gone. And you know, when you've got a completely new team every year, it's not a drama or a soap opera you can get involved with when you don't, you know, know who the cast of characters are.
Note that the schools themselves already have contracts from these guys. It's just the free transfer rule undid the contracts, because the kids would have to sign a document. They didn't actually have to sign it, but they just all would. But they would have to sign a national letter of intent, and that meant that they couldn't be tampered with. That meant they could not look at other opportunities.
Yeah. But those contracts were both adhesive and subject to. In other words, they had no choice. So these were adhesive contracts where they had very limited.
Can you say that in dummy terms? I don't know what adhesive means.
It means that you either signed it or you didn't play at all. You had no opportunity. There is a famous case that everybody knows, lawyer knows, Williams versus Walker Thomas. It involves the sale of appliances in Washington, D.C. I won't get into it, but the person involved signed a contract, and the court said,
everybody listening to this podcast has already gone through this ruling in detail, so please.
All right. Never mind. You're right. I'm done. In any event, those contracts.
Doctors, Brian.
Yes, they have. We're all up on Wellington versus McIntosh or whatever it was.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm just.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm wrong.
But no. I hope that you have more Scott Satterfields. Nick Saban, by the way, he totally denied tampering. It's like, hey, you know, guys come and then guys go, and you know, they make decisions.
How can you prove that? Like, especially in today's age with social media and everything, people are contacting each other through 10, 15 other ways. I know you're saying you can't be friends with somebody, or you can't have a relationship, or you can't have met someone somewhere and you're talking, and then, you know, down the line an offer is made or whatever. I mean, I agree with like the tampering side of it. Like, it's not good for sports and for coaches, and I don't know. I guess it's debatable for players, but proving that or saying, oh, well, you know, I've known him for whatever amount of time because we camped together or something. and then if you can prove that, won't it just go to a third and fourth and 10th party? I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, the transfer portal should be random. Like, you enter the transfer portal.
You spin a wheel.
And then, like, there's an algorithm that has, like, a different schools, like, based on, like, you know, various stats and whatever. And then, boom, it's like, all right, I'm going to Alcorn State. That'll make people think twice.
Well, so, Dave, you raise a great point. One that was raised by Ira earlier in the show, where he said, hey, man, this just... I mean, it's not going to stop cheating, and I don't think that can be the goal. I mean, you can want to provide a reasonable deterrent for folks who are inclined to not break the rules to not do so. Right now, you know, guys who, not that Phil Martelli would do it, but guys like Phil Martelli who have always done things a certain way, I mean, why wouldn't they decide to do what everyone else is doing? There's no consequence to it. To not do so puts you at a decided disadvantage. You want to make it so you aren't, it's not the environment is not encouraging those guys to be different than they always were. And to me, just provide a reasonable deterrent. And that is a stiff enough penalty to where if you get caught doing it, maybe you lose 10 scholarships or something like that. You're right. Does it remove it to like a third party? Sure it does. But the more people you involve in a process like that, the more susceptible you might be to getting found out. I mean, the more people that know about something like that, the more weakness you have in keeping it a secret. It doesn't always result in people getting caught. You're going to have a lot of people still getting away with breaking the rules, but you at least have some semblance of a deterrent out there where it doesn't allow for the Phil Martellis out there to feel like, hey, man, I got to be doing what everyone else is doing. I'm going to be losing ground.
I mean, I just don't think anything other than bringing back some sort of restriction on movement is going to work. And you want to do that in a way that makes everybody feel like this is an okay thing to do. But, yeah, the free-for-all, I think it's not great. And I don't want to be an old man about it, but I think that the NSW should probably be doing its best to restore some sort of restriction. Yeah,
and I would ask kind of what Dave just asked. So how do you do that now, especially if you don't bring players to the table?
Well, I think you do. I mean, you gotta exchange something for that restriction. Now, is the NCAA going to be inclined to do that? No, they're going to want to hoard all their pennies. But, you know, if I was in charge of things, that's what I would do. I'd be like, all right, this sucks. Let's fix it. We can not pay our minor sports coaches $500,000. We'll figure it out, you know? So, I mean, you could have that built in NIL deals where it's like, yeah, you have to give this back if you transfer. Like, that's, I don't know if that's an inducement though, right? So now it's like Nigel Pack's getting $800K. Does he have to give that back if he transfers from Miami next year? Which I don't think he can do because it's a one-time exception for the
transfer.
Yeah,
you'd have to sit out or file an appeal.
Although it looks like a lot of guys are transferring graduates more than once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you get your free transfer, and then I think you get a grad transfer, and then I think people got like a COVID transfer. So I'm hoping that once the COVID years are out and stuff, things will calm down a little bit. Like there are a lot of transfers out there that are just like, I've got an extra year, let's go do something, like Brandon Johns. I mean, that's a transfer that wouldn't happen except for COVID because he had 4 years in Michigan. So I'm hoping that things calm down in that regard a little bit, but really it's got to be some sort of restriction and you exchange.
Some responses. Zeke says you have to take back the play right away rule. You can't pay and let a kid come and go as they please. That's free agency. That's professional sports. These models don't match up for college sports. Linda comes in and says, at the point that college athletes are under contract to play, then college sports are nothing more than minor leagues for pro sports, which are getting free player development.
Hey, man, I don't agree with that one because I still care about Michigan basketball, Michigan football. They're not minor leagues to me. I don't watch the NFL. Like, I watch the Lions on Thanksgiving and I watch the Super Bowl and that's it because those games are not interesting to me. So the amount of interest I have in those sports has no impact on the contract. What it is like you get these guys and they're 17 or 18 and you get to watch them grow as people and players until they're 22, unless they blow up too fast and then they're gone. But that sort of develops
a lot.
It does happen a lot and that's fine. There's always going to be some level of roster turnover. It's just that at this point, the free for all every year, that's not good.
So. I 100% agree with that. I think college fans are into the drama, the soap opera, the development of the characters.
And, right. Like and, Hunter and, Dickinson is going to go to Breslin Center next year.
Right.
I want to see that. I want to see Tom Izzo decide that he needs to put Joey Hauser on Hunter Dickinson in the middle of that game. And I want to see his little veins bulge in his forehead. And I want Hunter Dickinson to make short gestures for me.
Practice the way I got to practice.
Right. Like, and that doesn't happen in year one of Hunter Dickinson. It happens a little bit in year one of Hunter Dickinson, but year three of Hunter Dickinson, where he is full on Razor Ramon for the rest of the league, it's going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to that so much. And you don't get that without one NIL and two Hunter Dickinson staying around. So I think NIL did a whole lot to keep Hunter Dickinson in college. That's a very big improvement. But we lost Frankie, man. I loved Frankie.
All right, listen, we got to take a break because we went really, really long there. But great conversation. We'll pick it up on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
Yeah, I'm going to miss Frankie, too.
Radio.
You guys weren't surprised by Frankie, though, right?
I mean, no, because you told us weeks ago that was problematic. So
I don't understand. Like,
it makes no sense.
No.
Didn't he go to four high schools?
Yes. Well, this is his fifth school in his fifth year.
And so this will be his sixth school in his sixth year. So it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like some third party meddling, parent maybe. I don't know.
He is a parent or third party though.
Parents are third parties, especially.
I consider them third parties.
I mean, even if you do bring in Llewellyn, like, you don't know how much Doug McDaniel's going to give you in year one. So, like, you're one of three guards who are playable on the roster.
Hey, look, we need another guard.
We do.
I know. It's crazy.
We have three guards on the roster right now, one of whom
Somebody else leave?
Well,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing is it just didn't. And then you're going to go play for Bobby Hurley. Guy had two first round picks last year, well, the year before, and was like, what, 10 and 24 or something?
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
I watched that team play. That guy rolls out the ball. This is weird.
And Remy Martin left to go play for Kansas.
Right. And then Alonzo Verge went to Nebraska, who was actually very good at Nebraska. I was like,
yeah, he wasn't bad. The,
it's like you go to Nebraska and you get better coaching.
Well, I mean, they actually have a good coach.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't understand the Frankie thing at all. It's crazy. I mean, he's the starting guard.
Yeah,
he's the starting point guard next year. He's going to get his minutes, and if he plays well, he's really going to get his minutes
for a team that's gone to five straight Sweet 16s.
Right.
He transfers to Arizona State.
Okay, but if he transfers every year, going back 4 or 5 years, yeah, it's not really about are you the starting point guard or what school are you at, or there's probably a lot more issues underneath the water.
Right. You could see. I mean, there. He was obviously giving off this kind of vibe during the season. I mean, from first of all, Doug McDaniel's not a threat to you. Why would that even be an issue for you initially? But it was a talking point. But when he wasn't playing, there were rumblings that he was going to be looking to get out of here. Then he started playing, that died down. But as I said to you guys before, when it came up, when Sam Sessoms came up, and they called him, and Phil has been spoken to this, so I can talk about it freely and openly now. When Sam Sessoms comes up and they call and they're like, what's up with this? And they have to explain, well, hold up. I mean, Juwan hasn't even talked to this guy. He has interest, and you know, maybe we kick the tire or something. We haven't talked to him. This is not a guy we're going after, but we're gonna make this roster better. I mean, you know at that point that if they get someone at his position, that he's likely gonna bounce. Now, if you get Terrence Shannon, then it's cool, nothing happens. But Terrence Shannon goes by the wayside, and you get Jalen Llewellyn, who eats into those minutes as a combo. Well, it was inevitable, and they knew it was coming.
Well, look, Michigan had no choice. They had to bring a guard in.
You're
it was
right.
Like, I had no alternative.
You're
they had
right.
to bring some guard in.
You're right.
And now they have to bring in another one.
And now they probably have to bring in. And I don't know. Well, though, right now they're at 13, assuming Musa and Caleb come back. No, I assume that's not happening. But I don't. Caleb's dropping out of the combine combined.
I was going to ask you about that guy. This on the other
about
side.
1 minute, guys. About 1 minute till we're back
on. Yeah, we're heading towards that anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you see the Givney tweet on this?
No.
Jonathan Givney. Let me pull it up because I was going to ask you guys about it. It struck me as amazingly odd.
Yeah.
That some team would be telling him. This is what Givney implies: that some team is telling Caleb Houston, "Hey, pull out of the combine. You know, shut it down. We don't want anyone else to see you." Basically making him a promise that they're gonna take him, which I think is.
I'm buying into that, Sam.
Why? What NBA team would say that?
Which is the worst run NBA team?
Well,
why do they have a late first round pick?
What have you seen? Here
might
it is.
An early second round pick there, Brian.
Two players declined invites to the NBA combine. Michigan's Caleb Houston and Iowa's Chris Murray.
Back in about 10 seconds, guys.
All right, I'll read this on here.
But didn't Chris Murray say he's going back to Iowa?
Yes, he did.
Caleb Houston say he's going back to Michigan?
No.
No.
All right, guys.
So what this dude is saying makes sense.
4, 3.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. MGoBlog Roundtable Crew. Dave Nasternak, Craig Ross, Seth Fisher, and Brian Cook. So, guys, I wanted to get to this. NBA Draft Combine. Moose is in it. Caleb was invited to. He declined. So, Jonathan Givney, who is the Draft Express guy, one of the co-founders of Draft Express, he's a draft guru over at ESPN as well. He has an analytics service. Giving you the bio, he's a big-time draft guy. So he tweeted about this after it was announced that Caleb Houston declined an invite. He said, quote, two players declined invites to the NBA combine, Michigan's Caleb Houston and Iowa's Chris Murray. For Houston, There will now be a lot of speculation about promises and shutdowns, and rightfully so. Chris Murray may very well be headed back to Iowa. So I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. So Chris Murray, he's headed back, but that's not the conclusion that you're drawing with Caleb Houston. Clearly he's hearing from someone from somewhere that, yeah, they're telling Caleb to shut it down. Reason being that if he's available when they select, I'm assuming he's talking about first round, right? Do guys really shut things down to be a second round pick?
Maybe.
Some team is telling Caleb Houston they're going to take him in the first round if he's there.
Well, maybe they're telling him that he'll be taken in the second round, and here's the deal they'll give him.
Why would you do that, though?
Because
a team's talking to you. They're like, hey, we want to draft you. Don't participate in the combine in case someone else wants to draft you.
That's correct.
Like, what's the upside for Houston?
Because everybody saw Caleb play this year. And they saw a guy who was an average athlete, but had great length, and at least by NBA standards, at best, an average athlete with great length, who has a reputation as a shooter, but was a pretty good standstill shooter at Michigan this year. But that was it, and so they're afraid he'll go out in the combine and kill it. But they still like him. They like his ceiling.
How could you watch Caleb Houston play basketball and be worried that he's going to kill it at the NBA draft combine?
That's what I told you at the beginning of last season, if you recall. And everyone gave me the dope eye because I had said, hey, I watched him play all summer and he couldn't make a shot. And everyone said, oh, yeah, yeah, limited data points. I said, no, he didn't make a shot. And so...
Craig, you did say that. You did say that. You rang the alarm bells. You raised the red flag for sure. I remember it vividly. And he came and shot at Michigan like he shot in that. What was it? I can't remember what it was.
FIBA.
FIBA. Yeah. So you're spot on, which kind of makes the point, yeah. Right? What NBA team, based on the sample space, even if you include FIBA, would look at it and say they've seen enough to bank on the reputation? Like, you need to see. And let me be clear, too. I think Caleb Houston still has a chance to be an outstanding player.
I agree
100%. I'm not saying that he can't be an outstanding player, but this is different than the other guy. So, DJ Wilson, you know, 6'10", 6'11", guy, a bouncy guy that had shown you flashes in that season. Of a guy who could be a 3-and-D big
and dominated in the playoffs.
Year.
He just came out
in his third year, coming off
a dominating playoff.
Right, Iggy Brasdakis, only 1 year, but he was a bucket getting isolation guy at Michigan. You saw that in spurts in his freshman year. JP, I mean, yeah, were there questions about when he made the jump? Sure, but he was a two-year college player. You had a wider sample space of him as a shooter to go on. This is a one-year plus FIBA sample space where that's enough for some team, even the lowliest team in the NBA, to say, hey, they've seen enough to make him a promise that they would draft him. I just find that hard to believe.
This is what drafts have sort of become in a lot of ways, right? Is just a lot of projection years out. It's not what are you going to do for me next year? Are we going to make a finals run next year? But who are you going to be when you're 23 or 25 or whatever? And, you know, maybe somebody likes him in his growth rate in terms of what he's going to be down the road. And that's the guy they're circling. I mean, does it make sense maybe from our vantage point because we watched him play a lot and were frustrated at times? Maybe not, but that's probably not the view that these teams are taking either, though.
I mean, I find the idea that you would guarantee Houston a first round pick based on last season. So he shot 43 from two, 36 from three, didn't really get to the line, didn't play make for others, had a turnover rate near 20, didn't rebound. Like 103 O rating, was a poor defender, and like doesn't seem to be a projectable athlete. Now, if you make that argument at Moussa Diabate, I completely understand. Like Moussa Diabate could have like put up no numbers last year, and I'd be like, yeah, there's only like four people in the entire world shaped like him. He there's an NBA team is going to take a flyer on him. But you're talking about a 6'8 below the rim player with no lateral agility. Like, that's the kind of guy who I don't understand, because he has the profile athletically of a guy who stays in college for 4 years and burns up the nets. And the NBA being like, oh yeah, this guy can play, is, I mean, I'm as confused as Sam. I don't get it.
The only plausible thing I could come up with, and this is just me pulling this out of thin air here, is maybe it's not an NBA team telling him this. Maybe it's his group telling him, look, if you go to the combine, the only thing you're going to do is show everybody that you're what you like. They're going to get a really good look at you.
that did cross my mind. Like, Caleb Houston not doing a combine would be like something their agent would say, and you'd be like, yeah, that's a good idea.
You're right.
Let's just go on the tape.
Yeah, well, look, that would make more sense than, because clearly Givney is hearing this from, like, he's not just making this up. Because if you're purely speculating, you would throw out, hey, maybe he's injured or maybe he's going back. He only said, hey, it's reasonable to have to speculate about promises and shutdowns. That means someone's telling him that message is being delivered to Caleb. Now, is he getting that from the NBA side, or is he getting that from the Caleb side, where there's an agent, or who knows? But I just find it hard to believe, based on what we've seen, that there's an NBA team that's saying that.
Well, here's the thing. Someone could believe, it's not completely implausible, that you've got a 6'8 guy, maybe a little better than 6'8.
Ryan's tall, man. That's not a worst idea in the world.
Eric just got a curry favor because he don't want us to talk about John Morant.
That guy owes Michigan. So
Tolbert, for people on the radio, Sam, you might want to.
Oh, yeah. Eric Tolbert says, I draft Brian before I draft Caleb Houston. So
at least he didn't say Craig. Yeah. Although Craig probably has more game than I do.
Probably. Although I'm,
can we find
well, I don't want to go that
can
far.
Can we set up a situation where we find
no.
One-on-one?
Okay. No. So the take, here's a 6'8 guy, maybe even a little bit bigger than 6'8, who's, what, is he 19 years old?
19.
19, a 6'8, 19-year-old guy who has some history or some noise about really being a good shooter. And so isn't it possible that somebody says, you know, if I wait a year or two on this guy, I got to spend a lot of capital, but I can grab him now, throw him in the G League for a couple of years, and we'll see what we end up with. It doesn't strike me that that's impossible. But my question is this. I have two questions. Duncan Robinson didn't get drafted, someone said. And yeah, couldn't he be Duncan Robinson?
No, he did not make anything except a standstill three-pointer at home this year. Well, he cannot shoot on the move.
I'm having a hard time arguing with this.
He's also 19.
But look at the other tea leaves here. Has he announced he's coming back to Michigan? No.
Not yet.
I mean, so, you know, on the other hand, is Michigan actively in the transfer portal right now? I can hear.
I mean,
they should be because Moose is probably gone.
Yeah. We're out of time. Tepid at best. I think that, you know, part of it is there's no available scholarship at the moment, but to your point, you can anticipate one. But I think they're also looking to see who's going to pull out of the draft and be available in the portal as well. So I think there are a couple of things kind of playing there for them. But great discussion as always, fellas. Summertime MGO Blog Roundtable is still really good MGO Blog Roundtable. So looking forward to doing it again next week. We'll be back tomorrow here for the rest of you folks on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK and The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station. That was some good shit, guys. That